character from a lot of research that they've done. And then they do a presentation that's performed with a historical video backup. But they create this fictional character, and then they tell the story from that character's perspective. So it's part like lecture learning, part seeing a performance, and then there's a Q&A to follow. So we did this last year with a show called Native Vision, which was about the boarding schools that a lot of Navajo children were put into back in the 20s and 30s. But this year, and that one was really amazing, this year we are doing a show about the Klondike Gold Rush up in the Yukon. And it was fascinating for me to read about it when we were trying to select the program we would do. It was just such a crazy time in history. Someone struck gold up near Dawson City, and then over 100...
This is in the late 1890s, correct?
Yes, 1897, I believe. Okay. Over 100,000 people swarmed up to that area to to go for gold. And just the way that they had to get up there was really tough, going over the, I think it's pronounced Chilkoot Pass. And then once they got up there and trying to live in that environment and set up small towns. But the really interesting thing that this show focuses on is that 10% or 10,000 of the people who went up for the Klondike Gold Rush were women. And so this story tells the tale of Eliza, who is a fictional composite character, who goes up there with her husband and is shortly abandoned by him after he nearly dies in an avalanche. So it's about her journey after that moment. She decides to continue on and make her own way. So it's a really, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really excited to hear the story and learn more of the historical details.
Well, it's somewhat, if you stop and think, an influx of 100,000 people at the turn of the century, the demand on services, like you just didn't send up a couple semis of food up there or whatever. Think of the demand on housing, on food, just simply on space, what that must have done to that area.
Exactly. It was really difficult, but one way that women played a significant role was a lot of them went up there and became entrepreneurs. I mean, there were a lot of prostitutes also, but a lot of women went up there and started laundry services, making clothes, opening saloons where they would sell food. So a lot of women went up there to make money, and they did well for themselves.
Did some women in your research go up there and pan for gold as well?
Okay. Yes, they were rarer, but there were one of the... If I remember correctly, one of the people in the original party that discovered gold up there was a woman, or the wife of the man who discovered it was very influential in getting it going. So she was a businesswoman as well and was pretty significant in getting the gold rush started.
The subject is fascinating. Would you, you've done a little research on it? I know you said you haven't seen the play, but...
I have done a little research on it.
I don't even understand how that could... I could understand 100,000 people moving to, I don't know, like Illinois or something like that, where there's water and there's fields for farming and stuff, and the weather's more or less bearable. But how do 100,000 people move to the Klondike and even eat?
Yeah, and I would encourage anyone to do their own research, because I, of course, don't know everything about it. But what I've read is that a lot of them would carry more than a ton of supplies with them.
I guess, yeah, you'd have to.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that made some of the passes they had to cross really difficult, because they weren't just going ultralight backpacking with just their 2 feet. They had tons of equipment and supplies and food that they took with them. So
you probably had mules, horses, animals carrying a lot of the, but, you know, just think of, like you, Jack, I cannot imagine that number of people moving up to, and we didn't even talk about children. We talked about men and women, but families, I'm sure, went up looking for their part of the American dream.
You're right. They did. And something I'm sure they'll talk about in the show is that not all 100,000 made it there. There were a lot who couldn't handle the journey. So
no, I take that back when I said part of the American dream, because Alaska was not part of the United States at that time. They didn't become part, I think, until the late 1950s.
Right. Or not a state anyway.
Not a state anyway. Mm-hmm. But probably a territory. So they could have part of the American dream anyway. What the heck?
I guess. Yeah, I don't remember the history of Russia, but I didn't think it used to be, or sorry, the history of Alaska, but it used to be part of Russia, didn't it?
Fulton's Folly.
Yeah.
That's what it was called. The guy who purchased it, you know, back in the, I think about late 1850s, Fulton's Folly, it was called. I could be wrong on that. Mm-hmm. But going back to Klondike, how many performers in the play?
Just one.
Just one? Yes. Eliza?
Yes, and it's really exciting because the woman who is doing this performance is the woman who started, she was part of the group that started the Living Voices program. So she's been doing this show and other shows for many years, and so she knows the story really well. I'm excited to hear her expertise on that.
Now, is the, will there be sets or...
There will be a projector, and so they bring a video with them.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so we'll get some slides, some maps, photos, some historical video. So whatever is available. They worked with the National Park Service to put this program in particular together.
Why is that?
Well, let me think. There's a park near Seattle.
Okay.
I don't remember the name of it right now, but... it was a big, it had a big role to play as far as getting people out of the United States and up there.
Oh, I would imagine Seattle would be the last departure point or something
yes.
like that.
Yes, because I think it was, you know, like the end of the line for the trains. So people coming from the east to go up there would go through Seattle. There were people who would go up other routes too. Mm-hmm. I think there were three main routes that they would go through. But anyway, this park in Seattle worked with Living Voices to put this program together. And so they had access to all of their information and records.
So there's some excellent historicity in the background for it.
Yeah.
It sounds like school kids, high school kids, junior high kids would find this to be fascinating and educational.
Absolutely. This show is great for all ages. We are actually doing a program at Farm and Stidwell Elementary the morning before, and we will be working with their 5th and 6th grade students to do a special performance for them, which is free for the students.
At the school?
At the school.
Okay.
And that's a part of our Ovations education program, where with every performance we do, we try to match it up with a classroom that could benefit from the show.
Oh, what fun.
Yeah.
What fun.
We're talking to Hannah Combs, the arts administrator for the Ponderian Arts Council.
We've just been demoted.
Sorry. For POAC, the Ponderian Arts Council, that is, I just remembered you're over in a new office now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, let's not talk about this until,
until later.
We've got a whole, we're going to have Hannah for a chunk of time.
But we're talking about Klondike, which is coming up soon. Only
26th, a week from tomorrow.
A week from tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's a one-woman show,
And a one-shot deal.
Yes. And I did want to say we will only have tickets available at the door because we're nearly sold out. So the remaining tickets will be sold at the door at the Heartwood Center.
When do the doors open?
Doors open a half hour before the show.
6:30 then.
6:30.
6:30 on the 26th. And the Heartwood Center is at 615 Oak Street in Sandpoint. And besides POAC, is there another sponsor?
Yes. We have a lot of sponsors for this show. Mm-hmm. A lot of grants that have supported us, the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force, the Idaho Humanities Council, the Inland Northwest Community Foundation, the Idaho Community Foundation, and the Community Assistance League, as well as Taylor & Sons Chevrolet Sleeps Cabins, Ivano's, and Cindy Bond.
Wonderful. So this is a week from tomorrow, the 26th of January at the Heartwood Center, Klondike, and it's part of the Living Voices program. And you recommend the entire family, I take it.
Yes, it's great for kids of all ages.
Oh, what?
And history buffs.
And does the person who play Eliza, does she interact with the audience?
Not during the show.
Okay.
But we always have really wonderful Q&As after the show.
Oh, good.
Where you're welcome to ask any questions you have about the character or the events surrounding the story.
Cool. And speaking of events, we've got a couple more things we want to talk about with Hannah from POAC. But let's take a music break. On this date, January 18th in 1968, 50 years ago today, this song was number one. I'm going to try to be nice about it. We'll play it, and then I'll make some talk afterwards about it. Here is the song that was number one 50 years ago on this date.
Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of The Morning Show. But feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting krfy.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show.
The band did not like that ending, but it was John Fred and his Playboy Band with the number one hit on this date in 1968 called Judy in Disguise with Glasses.
Who are John Fred and the Playboy Band, Jim?
It's a Louisiana-based one-hit wonder. And interestingly, it was, the song comes out of, he heard the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's album, and he thought Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was Lucy in Disguise with Diamonds. And so he wrote this incredibly, I don't want to use the word, I want to be gentle with any creative endeavor. But he wrote this song, and it became a massive hit. And I don't know whatever happened to them after that. But that was the song, number one song 50 years ago today.
Well, it's got a cool little bass line to it.
And it's got all sorts of other weird... Exactly. It's hard. I was watching Hannah and you, and you're bouncing all over the studio here. It's hard not to want to ricochet off the walls with it. But Hannah Combs is with us here, and we're going to get back to Klondike after she has a couple more items she'd like to talk about. And I'll let Hannah Combs from POAC take the mic.
Yeah, so if anyone hasn't realized by now, the Pondere Arts Council has moved our office from 302 North First Avenue, just down the street to the Cedar Street Bridge. We are on the second floor of the Cedar Street Bridge, all the way at the back, right above Creations, if you would like to stop by and say hello. And
what are the hours?
Our hours right now are Monday through Friday from 10 to 3.
Okay.
You can probably catch us in there at other times of the day, but that's when there will always be someone to help you out. That's our goal, at least. So, the big thing we wanted to announce is we are going to be having an open house on February 9th. That's a Friday from 5 to 7. We would like to invite everyone who is interested in what POAC does, who we are, what events we have coming up, to stop by and say hello. Let us know how you think we're doing, what you would like to see us bring to town. We're going to have several of our local artist members with work on display. We'll have some wine and snacks, and we would love to see you there.
That's so, Friday the 9th of February.
That's correct.
And now you're already moved into your new offices.
We are. We are finally settled in. We moved.
Was that a chore to move?
You guys might have seen us. I think we trundled most everything down the street on our hand truck. So it was slow going, but we got there and we're settled in now. It's a great space. We hired a new employee, Emily, late last summer to help out with our visual arts program. And with three of us sharing two desks, it's at the old office, it's really nice to each have our own space and have some room to store all of the equipment we need to put on all of the events we do all year.
I take it there's more square footage of space for you at the bridge?
Yes, there is. And we are very grateful to Jeff and Cindy Bond for helping us find that space and helping us get settled in and be welcomed on the bridge. It's a great community of people there.
Given where you were located previously, there's more light coming in.
Yes, we're fortunate to have several windows that we're very grateful for.
Because previously you were north of the Panada Theater and you was just on the east side of First Avenue. But this way you get more light coming in through the windows. What other things about the move was fun or interesting?
Well, I think, again, just getting, each getting to have our own little space and having room to have meetings and not be, you know, working on top of each other all the time has been great. It's also been fun to have our office right above Creations and get to hear all of the kids down there, you know, singing songs in the morning. And that's always a nice little pick me up. So it's good to feel connected.
That's got to be a plus that you didn't count on, or, you know, that.
No.
Because sometimes I'll be in the bridge and I'll see parents bringing their skipping child or children with them. And just that enthusiasm and energy, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So we're very happy to be there. Of course, we're grateful to the Panada for all of the years that they hosted us in their space next door. But it was the time to find a bigger space. So,
did you do any purging?
Oh, yes. I think we had a full pickup truck load that went off to be recycled or to the dump. So,
even though moving is usually a pain, that could be the upside of moving, is that you purge. You get some of the things relocated.
Right. And you never know what you're going to find in storage. We do events each year where we give out little canvases to our artists, and we've been buying them for the last couple of years to distribute to them. And when we cleaned out our storage area, we realized we had about 200 of them already in the office that we just never knew about. So, yeah.
You guys have signage out there? Do you have a name tag on your desk as well?
Ooh.
It says Arts Administrator.
I haven't gotten that sophisticated yet. But we do have a sign. If you walk into the Cedar Street Bridge and look left at the stairs, you'll see our sign there. So, just head on upstairs and then all the way at the end of the hall, we're straight ahead. What do they say in Peter Pan? Straight ahead till morning?
Yeah.
That's kind of the way you get there.
So. Second star to the right. Hannah Combs, Arts Administrator. You guys gained some real estate, some square footage on the floor, but it seems like you would have lost some wall space. What happened to all the paintings?
Yeah, so we did lose our gallery in the move. We are working, like I said, we will have artwork up for our open house on the bridge. So the Bonds have been gracious about letting us explore the space up there for how we can use it to exhibit local artwork. We also have gone back to using the Powerhouse as one of our galleries, which a lot of our artists were excited about. It's a great space to use for art receptions. It's very open and welcoming and has lots of wall space to explore. So.
Isn't back in the old days, wasn't the POAC office in the Powerhouse?
Yes. So we've had quite a migration story, I guess. So we were next to the Panada, and prior to that, we were in the Powerhouse. And I think before that, POAC was run out of someone's home office about 20 years or so.
Wow. Well, so, okay, you keep moving north.
Yeah, we're next.
Ooh. But you've almost run out of...
Bonner's Ferry?
I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of run out of room.
We'll see.
As far as you go.
They're going to hit Canada and bounce back down.
I'll be happy if we don't have to move any more boxes in the near future.
Sure. You want to enjoy this space. We're with Hannah Combs, and we've been talking about the latest move to the bridge. Please stop by, and there's going to be an open house on February the 9th.
Yes. From 5 to 7.
With Snicky Snacks.
Mm-hmm.
I love an open house. It's the best kind of party. Well, you show up.
It's a social event. Yeah. You see people who normally you don't see from week to week, and you get an opportunity to enjoy whatever the occasion is, like here, the move, to see the new space and to renew acquaintances. It's always a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, yeah, it's my favorite. It's my favorite kind of party.
And you can show up late. You don't have to cook on a Friday night.
That's great, too. Mm-hmm. Well, Snicky Snacks, anyway.
Yeah, Snicky Snacks. They can take it over.
Yeah, they can. We got other events coming up, though, too. Did we talk at all about the Montreal Guitar Trio?
Not yet.
Who is that? Now,
and why are they?
And that's a foursome, right?
It is a trio.
Oh, okay.
They're bringing their sound guy, but...
it is a foursome.
Yeah, okay. But as far as performers, it's a trio.
Right. I was just making a little joke there. They're on February 11th at the Panada. This is not their first time, right? Didn't you have them last year?
No.
Oh, this is their first time.
It's their first time that POAC has presented them.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they have performed in the area before. Again, I've only been here a couple years, so
okay.
I'm not sure. But they have performed all over Canada, where they're from Quebec, and the U.S. They went on a big tour a couple years ago with the California Guitar Trio. But we get to see them on their own, and they will be performing songs mostly from their newest album, which is called Danzas, which means dances in Spanish. I am not a Spanish expert, so forgive me if I misspell or mispronounce anything.
Sounded good to me.
And so this new album was inspired by the masters of classical Spanish guitar. What I was reading about the group is that this kind of guitar is what they started in when they were, college age, and they've taken their craft in a lot of different directions since then, but this is sort of a tribute to the masters that they learned from, and they are truly virtuoso guitar players, and so playing a tribute to some of the other masters of Spanish guitar is going to be quite a beautiful show.
Beautiful evening. We have one of their songs queued up, don't we, Jack?
We do indeed.
Let's play it, and then let's talk a little bit more about where and when.
All right. It's the Montreal Guitar Trio. This one's called Mediterranean Sundance.
Ooh.
I guess.
Here we Sundanza.
Go. Yeah.
The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource.
The Montreal Guitar Trio performing Mediterranean Sundance and Rio Ancho. I guess it's a combination song of some kind. A medley, if you will. You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. Jack and Jim in the studio with Hannah Combs, the arts administrator from Pondere Arts Council, the organization which is bringing this Montreal Guitar Trio here to Sandpoint, the Panada Theater, on February the 11th.
A Sunday.
Yes. And who's opening for the Montreal Guitar Trio? We forgot to mention.
Yes. We are very excited to be working with the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint. Their jazz ensemble will be performing a sample of what they can do before Montreal Guitar Trio takes the stage. So we are excited to support them and hear what they've been working on this year.
Now, will the Montreal Guitar Trio do any part of the Ovation program?
Yes, I'm still confirming some of the details.
Okay.
But we will be doing a performance with students for that show as well. And that is always free to the students. So that's part of the Ovations Education Program.
Could you just briefly talk about the Ovation Program? Because I think this is just one of the wonderful aspects of bringing artists to the community that POAC does.
Yeah, so the Ovations Program is one of two education programs POAC brings to the community. For every performance that we bring to Sandpoint or that we produce here ourselves, we find out a way to do a workshop, a masterclass of some sort to involve the students and give them a free learning experience with the professionals that we bring in for the performance. That can take the form of having the kids participate in the performance, like the Music Conservatory's Jazz Ensemble, or the young dancers who get to perform in the Nutcracker, or the local students who perform in Missoula Children's Theater. If the students are not performing themselves, then we take the performers to the schools and do a special performance or masterclass with a group of students.
Excellent, excellent. We have Hannah Combs with us. I promoted her to executive director, but I guess arts director is her official title. Let's go through and highlight. We first of all talked about Klondike.
Yes, Klondike is a video aided performance about the Klondike Gold Rush in the Yukon. That will be on January 26th at 7 o'clock at the Heartwood Center. Doors open at 6:30, and the remaining tickets for the show are only available at the door. So show up at 6:30 if you would like to get, if you still need to get tickets to see the show.
Wonderful. And then there's the open house.
Yes. POAC has moved down the street to the Cedar Street Bridge, and we will be hosting an open house on Friday, February 9th from 5 to 7 o'clock. So it is open to any and all to stop in, say hi, see what we're doing, let us know what you would like to see in the future. We would love to see you there.
And then the Montreal Guitar Trio, which we were just talking about,
yeah,
on the 11th.
That will be on February 11th at 7:30. Doors will open at 7. It's going to be a beautiful Spanish classical guitar performance right before Valentine's Day, so bring your special person.
That'd be a great Valentine's gift.
Yeah.
It would.
We would love to see you there.
And
that's smart. That's pretty
and
good.
And before the Montreal Guitar Trio, there will be
a special performance by the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint's Jazz Ensemble.
Yeah. Do you know anything more about them? I don't even know who's in the Jazz Ensemble or anything. It is
four students from the Music Conservatory. They are led by Nathan Baker. He's one of the teachers at MCS. But we have worked with them before for different events, and they're an extremely professional group of young performers. It's always a pleasure to work with them.
Yeah, that'll be cool. I love jazz.
Oh, absolutely. And if you want any more information about any of these events,
You can reach POAC on our website, which is artinsandpoint.org. You are also welcome to call us at 208-263-6139 or email us at poactivities@gmail.com. Or what we would love for you to do is to stop by in person and see our new office, which is on the Cedar Street Bridge on the second floor, all the way at the back above Creations.
And get your spirits elevated by the sounds of little children underneath you. Hannah Combs, thank you so much. It's always a joy to have you joining us.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And what we're going to do is do a short musical break. On this date in 1974, a group was put together from members of Mott the Hoople, King Crimson, and Free. And the group was Bad Company. And here's one of their hits, Can't Get Enough. And we're going to say goodbye to Hannah.
Bad Company on your home for the best in classic rock, 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. Jack and Jim in the studio. We just bid adieu to Hannah Combs, the arts administrator for the Monterey Arts Council. And Bad Company, we were talking about right before they started. I didn't know they had... I thought they just kind of came out of nowhere, and I didn't even know they were English. I thought they were Canadian or something like
that. Well, the reason why we played that song is they formed on this date in 1974, and they, of course, had a number of hits, and we played Can't Help Myself. But yes, members from Free, Mott the Hoople, and King Crimson came together, and... you know, that was the age when people just got together, whether like Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Young and Blind Faith. People were just floating all over the place.
Yeah. It was, it anyway, the members come from some real, what do you call it? Kind of, I mean, King Crimson and Mott the Hoople, kind of almost avant-garde kind of, cutting edge, real artistic kind of stuff that enjoyed mainstream success with Bad Company.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you're listening to The Morning Show, and we've got your upcoming events, including, here's one, backyard beekeeping. Three lecture-style classes on backyard beekeeping start tonight at 5:30 p.m. until 7 p.m. on Thursdays, like tonight, January 18th, the 25th next week, and February the 1st. This is at the NIC at Sandpoint Center, 102 South Euclid Street, what they call the old ninth grade center. Learn the fundamentals of beekeeping, year-round hive management, and products of the beehive.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
I know. Can you really do a beehive in your backyard? I wonder if the neighbors like that. Maybe not.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I know nothing about it, except when I drive by in the country, I see... clusters.
You see them out there.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and I go, but you never see any in town.
No.
There might be, maybe well hid.
Perhaps so. I don't know how it works, but you can keep bees, apparently. And if you'd like to learn more about it, contact the NIC Workforce Training Center at 769-3333 or send an email to workforcetraining@nic.edu or just visit their website. There's music at the winery this night, Brian Jacobs, not Jake Robin, live music with Brian Jacobs from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. tonight. He's back with his melodious voice and guitar. powine.com for more information about what's going on at the Ponderay Winery.
Okay, I've got an event that's happening three nights in a row at the Panada Theater. It's the Banff Mountain Film Festival. It's world tour, and it's on Thursday night, the 18th, Friday night, the 19th, and Saturday night, the 20th. The doors open at 6 and films beginning at 7 p.m. And there are a total of 23 films that will be shown over the three nights, and it's not the same films.
That's important.
That's important, yeah. Because if you go, oh, I'll go on Friday night, I'll just catch it. No, you don't. You get different films each night. I do understand from the person who ingested the films last couple of days that one film might be shown two nights in a row. But tickets are available. You said that you've heard that it's been sold out at local venues.
Not entirely. Okay. I think they're sold out. I don't think they're entirely sold out. You're just going to have to hunt a little bit.
If you're going to hunt, you can go to iCarts, the Alpine Shop, Burger Express, and the Outdoor Experience. You can also scoot up to Bonner's Ferry at the Burger Express. So that's this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And I just want to briefly read. There was a nice article that describes some of the films in this morning's Bonner B. And it says, quote, a portion of the proceeds from the event will go to support the Satipo Kids Project, an ongoing education program for children located in Satipo, Peru. In addition, funds also help support locally the North Idaho Mountain Sports Education Fund, which is giving the ability to seven local children to ski at Schweitzer Mountain with lessons, ski gear, and lift tickets.
Cool.
I think that is absolutely outstanding. And one of the things that you mentioned about beekeeping is one of the films, and I do not know which night it is, but it's the last Honey Hunter. And, you know, not only do they show sports, but they show human interests that deal with. And this sounds fascinating, Jack, where this is about the last man in a remote Nepal village of Sadi to dangle off a 300-foot bamboo rope ladder in order to harvest mad honey that provides both himself and his village the economic means to survive. So when you talk about beekeeping in your backyard, here's a person, 300-foot rope.
That it sounds a little intense, but it'll make the great...
Each story of a building 10 feet?
So yeah.
That would be about 30 feet. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
anyway,
okay.
This is the absolutely amazing. It's usually a full house at the Panada Theater this Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night, the BAM Film Festival. The doors open at 6. The films begin at 7. And it's always such a rewarding experience to see. And what's nice about it, I have found, if I'm not interested in one, just wait a few minutes. The next one will be excellent.
I think that is probably that's a real draw to the whole experience. You know you're going to see something you like, which you don't, you know, you can't always say that. Even if you think you're going to enjoy a feature-length film, you might get halfway through it and say, not for me.
What else could I be doing?
Right.
And the other thing is, it's this great social event.
True.
You see people in the lobby of the great Panada Theater schmoozing with each other. How's your winter going? Happy New Year, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So not only is it a great film event with some just outstanding films, but a good time to be among friends.
Does it say... This is the what annual? How many times does it come to Sandpoint? Do we know?
Oh, that it doesn't know, but
no.
No, it doesn't tell me. Wait, let's see. Oh, it started in the original festival began in 76, is held annually on the first weekend in November in Banff. Then in 86, they begin taking their films out to the community. The 2018 marks the 22nd year that the Banff Film Festival has come to the Sandpoint area.
So wow.
22nd year.
It's really become a tradition.
Oh,
people go every year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I made a slight misstatement earlier.
Oh, no. The news media.
I know. Right. The winery music is actually tomorrow night, the 19th, and I have 5 musical events on the 19th. No matter where you go, if you go out tomorrow night, you're going to see some music. We've got at the Pondere Winery, Brian Jacobs from 5 to 8. At the Idaho Poor Authority, this is tomorrow night, from 5 to 7, John Fershey. On Friday night, dining music with Tom Durazzi at the Farmhouse in Silo Bar up on 95 North in Pondere from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. There is music at the Wine Bar with Josh Headland from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Third Fridays with Devin Wade at McDuff's Beer Hall. Third Fridays from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. Fun boot camping country tunes at McDuff's Beer Hall, 21 years of age and older. And then live music at the 219, also 21 years of age and older. Muffy and the Riff Hangers from 9 p.m. to midnight. A Sandpoint acoustical bluegrass group who I have not heard of, at least I haven't heard of them under that name, but I wonder if there's some familiar faces in there. Yeah.
It's like a Pedigree supergroup, I bet.
It probably is. The Bad Company of Sandpoint's bluegrass scene. Ages 21 and plus, as I mentioned. That's all tomorrow night.
Yeah, you know, you as the person who does the local scene, the local music scene on Tuesday and Friday nights, has a better feel for the wealth of talent and the breadth of talent in terms of the music scene here in Sandpoint and the surrounding area.
It's pretty wild. I mean, it's really impressive for the, I mean, the population sign as you come into town says between 7,000 and 8,000.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
To have in this little, 3 or 4 block radius, to have 6 musical events playing, 6 musicians playing mm-hmm, on a Friday mm-hmm. night, and not bad music either. I mean, these aren't amateurs. These are
people who know what they're doing. Yeah, I guess when you say that, our population, I think about when I go to San Francisco, they say X number of people per restaurant in San Francisco. You know, that we should do a little study of how many people per musician in Sandpoint. I'm sure it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
I want to mention on this Saturday, the North Idaho Women's March, #2. And I'll just read from the Sandpoint Online. All are invited to the North Idaho Women's March, #2, a nonpartisan event that will harness the power of women in our community to create positive social change, encourage women to run for political office. Rally keynote speaker, State Representative Paulette Jordan, has publicly announced her decision to run for governor. There will be opportunities for women and men to take action on issues of education, healthcare, and human rights. March to follow the rally. The free event starts at noon at Sandpoint Middle School, 310 North Division Street. Bring friends and signs and spread the word. Sponsored by the nonpartisan North Idaho Women's March Committee.
There you have it. That's on Saturday.
Saturday, starting at noon at the Sandpoint Middle School, 310 North Division.
We are just about out of time here on the morning show because it's so hard to stop Hannah from just going on and on and on.
Yeah. I tell you, that woman.
Yeah. No, we're kidding. Oh, we're out of time, but there's plenty more.
She is a true treasure to the state.
Yeah. I mean, great to have her over at POAC and hopefully for a long time to come. Don't forget that what we were talking about earlier, the Klondike performance of Klondike, a one-woman show on January 26th at the Heartwood Center at 7 p.m. Then the Montreal Guitar Trio on the 11th of February at the Panada Theater.
And the open house.
That's right. And the open house the preceding Friday night, February 9th. Check out the new POAC offices. Lots more going on in town. We can talk about the football playoffs going on and stuff, but we'll have to do that off the air.
What an ending of Minnesota. I had to bring that up.
Did you see that?
Yes, because you are a Minnesotan,
yes,
and I bet you nearly died.
I couldn't believe it. I was so ready to have my heart broken by the Minnesota Vikings. Well, yet again.
It was breaking with 14 seconds to go. Will they get into field goal range? And then all of a sudden, from the depths of despair.
Uh-huh. Grabbing victory from the from the jaws of defeat.
Who would have thunk?
I know. And Marcus Williams, I guess, was looking at his cell phone or something like that. The defenseman who just whiffed. But anyway.
Who knows what happened there?
I know. Okay, it's time to get off the air. We got Bird Note and then Autos Eclectic Mix all day long here on 88.5 KRFY.